Good morning and welcome to our Budget 2021 Analysis Seminar. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Colette Bennett. I'm a Research and Policy Analyst with Social Justice Ireland. To my left is Dr. Sean Healy, our CEO. To his left is Michelle Murphy, Research and Policy Analyst. And to her left is Eamon Murphy, Economic and Social Analyst. This morning, we'll be bringing you through our Budget 2021 analysis. You'll find a copy of the full publication on our website in today's article. And if you have any questions, please email us at conference@socialjustice.ie. So if everyone is ready, I'm going to pass you now to Eamon Murphy to begin.
Thanks, Colette. And just a reminder as well that as we go through this document, we'll be referring to the different pages that we're speaking about, which will have details of the tables or the information that we're referring to. So keep an eye on that particular PDF. As Colette said, it's just below this particular video. It should be available in one of the articles there. So I'm going to begin with pages 12 and 13. They're right in the middle of the document, and they are made up predominantly of two pie charts showing how spending and revenue raising is going to be split in 2021. The idea of these tables is to help contextualise the budget for people. If you're listening to ministers' speeches on the days and they're referring to a few million for this, a couple of billion for that, it can be sometimes difficult to understand the overall context of what's being spoken about, what percentage of government expenditure or revenue raising is coming or going to a particular area. So the aim of these graphs is to break that down for people and give a better idea, first of all, of where the money is going and where it's coming from as well. So page 13 is made up of spending according to area. And I guess it highlights the fact when you look at the pie chart and you see that almost two-thirds of government expenditure in 2021 is going to be in relation to education, health, social protection. It highlights the fact that the vast majority of government spending goes on things, first of all, that everybody avails of at different points in their life cycle, but also on very key services that help to underpin living standards, to set a floor beneath which nobody in society should fall, whether that's from the point of view of public service provision or income supports. And in relation to the graph on page 12 then, helps to highlight for people where this money is actually coming from. So you can see the split according to whether the revenue raising is coming from income tax, from corporation tax, from VAT, PRSI, and so on. So in relation, just sticking with the idea of helping to contextualise Budget 2021, we'll move very quickly to pages 20 and 21, which show the socioeconomic context in which Budget 2021 was situated. So page 20 gives you some key numbers leading into the budget relating to income, poverty, inequality, information related to the labour market, to housing, some of it positive, some of it not. And page 21 brings together some key macroeconomic numbers from the Department of Finance's publications on the day of the budget. So most interesting, I think, here is the extent to which the broadly positive economic trends of the last few years have been interrupted by the COVID-19-induced lockdown and the economic restrictions that went with that. There's information here as well on the size of the budgetary changes for 2021, some information in relation to taxation positions and to the national debt as well. So pages 12, 13, 20 and 21 are, you know, interesting starting points, I think, for people who want to see what was the context that Budget 2021 was situated in. So I'll move on now to page 3. Now, what I want to do here is bring together the top story on page 3 and the bottom one as well. And the top story relates to COVID-19 and Budget 2021, which the budget has been framed as a very uncertain one in the context of COVID-19, which is true. And this story here, this section here, highlights a lot of the challenges that Ireland faces, both as a result of COVID-19, but as well challenges that existed before the pandemic happened as well, and refers to some of the deficits as well that existed in society. Some of the challenges include those faced by low-paid people, and the deficits in our healthcare as well are all referred to. But the reason I wanted to bring that together with the bottom section of the page, which relates to capital investment, is that because what we've been saying for years is that regardless of what the economic situation is, whether we're in a very positive situation or we're in a time of great uncertainty, the thing to do is to invest. And if, particularly at a time where we're facing some very, some great economic uncertainty, particularly at a time when we're facing great deficits in our public services, the obvious thing to do is to increase capital expenditure, especially at a time where, as is the case at the moment, we have unprecedentedly low interest rates, which means that the cost of borrowing for Ireland is effectively next to nothing and will be for the foreseeable future as well. So these challenges, of course, existed prior to the pandemic. Many of them have been exacerbated by COVID-19. So the obvious thing to do in this case is to increase capital expenditure in our budgets and to invest in improving or in meeting those challenges and deficits. We were pleased that there was additional capital expenditure in budget 2021. We do feel that there was a missed opportunity in some senses and that the number could have been higher. But we are glad that the government is taking a counter-cyclical fiscal stance in relation to budget 2021, and that's something to be welcomed. Moving on then to page 10. And page 10 summarises the taxation measures that were taken in budget 2021. This would normally be one of the key parts of our response each year, but in fairness, budget 2021 didn't do very much in relation to taxation changes. I will refer back to what I said earlier when I talked about how government spending, its main purpose is to set a floor below which living standards can't fall in this country. And taxation plays a key role in that. It provides funding for public services, it supports economic activity, it increases the fairness of society. And I guess the big point that we would be making in relation to taxation in budget 2021 is the need for a higher level of taxation to meet those public services and infrastructure goals, but also to put us on a par with our European peers, who collect a far greater proportion of their national income in taxation than Ireland does. So, well, budget 2021 was one that was short on major movements in relation to taxation, which is sort of understandable in a way. That was maybe the headline, that there's been no acknowledgement thus far from this particular government of the need to broaden the tax base and to grow our revenue with the goal of closing the deficits in infrastructure and services that exist between us and our European peers. We were also disappointed to see that there was no attempt to tackle the issues that are exist around tax breaks or tax expenditures, which are broadly appropriated by the better off in society and cost the exchequer in the region of 6 to 7 billion euros every year. That's something that really needs to happen. It's something that we've been pushing for the last few years, and we were disappointed to see that at a time where the Minister for Finance and the Minister for Public Expenditure were referring to the difficulties around deficit targets, revenue raising, that this very, very easy and very achievable goal of reducing the amount of money that we give away in tax expenditures each year was not targeted. And the final page I look at before I pass back over to Colette is page 17. So this details, or this shows details from the Department of Finance in relation to things like current expenditure, capital expenditure, and what I find interesting about this is that normally the department would publish projections in these areas for the next 3 years, so 3 years into the future, whereas here what we have is information regarding next year, yes, but also this year and the previous year. I guess it highlights the challenge in trying to make projections into the future, given the uncertainty that surrounds us with COVID-19 and how long that's going to last. But the numbers, when set side by side, as in this particular table, they do highlight the scale of the challenges faced by the public finances. So that table on page 17 is useful for that point of view if you want to get a visual effect or a visual sense of the scale of the changes that have been brought about by the economic upheaval of the last 7 or 8 months. And the final thing I'll speak about is also on page 17. It relates to overseas development aid. And this is one of the big positives of budget 2021. During the last major challenge to the public finances, which of course happened in the Great Recession of 2008-2009, it was considered easy pickings, I guess, to cut overseas aid. And we're pleased to see that this did not happen. On this particular occasion, the government allocated an extra 30 million euros in budget 2021 to overseas development aid, which is very much welcomed. Now, we will say that while that is a very positive move, we were disappointed that there still exists no pathway from government for bringing the overseas development aid budget in line with our UN agreed target, which is 0.7% of national income. This has been something that we've been calling for in every budget for the last perhaps decade, that there needs to be a proper pathway in place in order to bring us towards our goals in relation to that. So while we are very positive about the fact that the budget has been maintained for overseas development aid and increased slightly, we do think that government needs to lock in a pathway over, say, a five-year period to reaching that particular goal. So I'll pass back over now to Colette.
Thank you very much, Eamon. So what I'm going to look at then is page 3, and I'm going to start with the article that Eamon left out of that page when he was discussing there. That's in relation to the core welfare payments. It is regrettable that for the second year in a row, there has been no increase to core welfare payments. What we called for in budget choices earlier in the year was a commitment to converging the core social welfare rates to a level equivalent with 27.5% of average weekly earnings, and to commence that process with an increase of between 7 and 10 euro in this year's budget. Unfortunately, government failed to do that. In 2020, the updated value of what 27.5% of average weekly earnings would be 221 euro. So that implies a shortfall of about 18 euro per week. We've seen with COVID-19 how the social safety net is so important. For many, the experience also illustrated the fact that even on a very low income, the social welfare payments are so important. The weakest in our society will continually get left behind unless welfare increases keep track with increases elsewhere. Moving on then to page 14 on our main page around social protection. Again, we focus on the fact that for the second year in a row, social welfare rates have gone unchanged. And while we recognise and we welcome the measures to reduce child poverty, particularly in relation to the qualified child increase and the acknowledgement that there's a higher associated costs with older children, we welcome the fact that there was an increase in the living alone allowance. We do, however, regret that domiciliary care allowance was not increased and recipients are still not entitled to use the free travel scheme. We also regret that there was a failure to introduce the cost of disability payment, although we do acknowledge the fact that that there was a benefit in increasing the earnings disregard. We also note that there were no steps to equalise the job seekers rate for those under 25, and we see this as a real missed opportunity, particularly as younger people were disproportionately affected by unemployment during the COVID-19 pandemic. Moving on then to just look at the social insurance and social assistance weekly rates. And you'll see from what I've been saying that absolutely nothing has changed except for those pieces there at the end. So the increase in qualified child, which we welcomed, the living alone allowance, which we welcomed, and similar story there in the social assistance payments, where we have an increase in the living alone allowance, an increase in the qualified child, a slight increase of 2 euro per week in the one parent family payment, and then nothing for any of the other core payments there. In terms of what that means and for people who are experiencing poverty, again, we're seeing missed targets around poverty. The latest data around poverty suggests that there is 14% living at risk of poverty. That's 680,000 people and over 200,000 children. A report published earlier this year and written by the UCD academic Micheál Collins for the Society in St. Vincent de Paul showed the cost of poverty to the state at a moderate estimate of 4.5 billion. If that money was invested elsewhere, that would make a huge contribution to the type of core services and the type of society that we actually need. In terms of this year, 2020 marks a year when a number of poverty-related targets should have been met, but unfortunately, all have been missed. The National Reform Programme of 2012, the update for Ireland, had a poverty target to reduce the numbers experiencing consistent poverty, that is, at risk of poverty and experiencing two or more enforced deprivation indicators, to 4% by 2016. Unfortunately, by 2016, that rate was actually 8.2%. There was also commitment to reduce the consistent poverty rate to 2% by 2020, but the latest data for 2018 suggests that was 5.6%. This year is also when Europe is supposed to meet its 2020 strategy targets, including the objective of lifting at least 20 million people out of being at risk of poverty compared to 2008 figures, I beg your pardon. To date, there's been limited progress in this regard, and Eurostat data indicates that just 27,000 people have been removed in Ireland and 5.8 million across the EU. Again, these targets will be missed this year. Moving on then to page 6 and page 7, I'm going to look at the impact of income tax and headline welfare payment changes. So in terms of the charts there at 6.1, in assessing this change in people's incomes following the budget, it's important that tax changes be included as well as changes to basic social welfare payments. So in our calculations, we haven't included any changes to other welfare allowances and secondary benefits because those payments don't flow equally to all households. We also haven't included changes to other taxes, so indirect taxes and property taxes. But as you can see there from chart 6.1, it demonstrates that there's very little change arising from budget 2021 on various household groupings that we track on an annual basis. While there are only slight changes to take-home levels of income as a direct result of this budget, comparisons in incomes between 2020 and 2021 will highlight that emergence of a divide between employees who are receiving pay increases and those welfare-dependent households whose incomes have not changed as a result of no increases to core welfare in the last couple of years. The latest CSO data looks at an annual average weekly and hourly earnings among employees over the past year. National agreements have delivered a 2% increase in gross pay to all public servants from October the 1st. So it is a concern that the relevant position of most welfare-dependent households has not actually changed or will in fact slip backwards. Moving on then to tables 6.1 and chart 6.2 on the same page there, page 7. Again, we look in terms of income tax rates after this budget. These rates are calculated by comparing the total amount of income tax a person pays with their pre-tax income. So following budget 2021, we've calculated effective tax rates for a single person, a single income couple, and a couple with two earners. And you'll see there from page 6.1 the impact of those changes. Similarly, in chart 6.2, that shows that despite increases during the last economic crisis, the income tax rates have decreased considerably over the past two decades for all earners. And what this essentially means is that Ireland's overall tax take remains grossly inadequate. While the current pandemic means that budget 2021 has been framed in, as Eamon said, this very uncertain period, more taxation will be required. We have previously proposed that Ireland's overall level of taxation should reach a level equivalent to 15,000 per capita in 2017 terms. And it's certainly something that should have been started long before now, but it's regrettable that it didn't commence in budget 2021. Moving on then to page 15. And we look at work, unemployment and job creation. And first of all, you know, we should welcome the fact that this is a counter-cyclical budget in that it has increased investment considerably, which is, you know, is badly needed in terms of where the economy is currently at. It's very unfortunate, however, that the government chose to increase the national minimum wage by only 10 cent per hour to €10.20 per hour, given where the living wage is at €12.30 for the last 2 years. While the increase for earned income tax credits is acknowledged, this also raises the need for a discussion around PRSI rates for this group, given the expansion of social insurance benefits in recent years. We welcome the extension of the pandemic unemployment payment and the employment wage support scheme, as well as indications that there won't be a cliff edge in terms of taking people off these payments. We also welcome the 4,000 new apprenticeships and the focus on retrofitting and reskilling. However, budget 2021 doesn't contain enough to deal with the sectoral, regional and age-related dimensions of the employment crisis. Moving on then, just on that point, to page 8, and I'm going to concentrate on the piece here in the corner on youth unemployment. We know, for example, and it was reflected again in the budget speeches yesterday, the emergence of large-scale youth unemployment has been one of the most pronounced non-healthcare aspects of COVID-19. In terms of unemployment rates in percentage terms, the youth labour force unemployment rate for those between the ages of 15 and 24 range from 18.5% to 36.5%, depending on how you're measuring it, whether you're measuring it in terms of the traditional unemployment figures or including those on the pandemic unemployment payment. That compares and contrasts to the unemployment rate for the next age bracket, those aged 25 to 64 years, which ranges from just 3.8% to 12%. Given the nature of the current health crisis and the impact that it has had on youth unemployment, we welcome measures to assist young people to continue in education or to seek more training. However, it is unfortunate that the scale of these supports is limited compared to the extent of the problem that we are facing today. Moving on then to page 5 and the investment package around housing. In terms of homelessness, and with this piece, we're following essentially what is the Rebuilding Ireland structure. And it is regrettable that the government has continued with this strategy, notwithstanding the fact that it has proven time and again not to be working and not to be adequate. In terms of homelessness, while of course it is welcome that the government has committed an additional 22 million in terms of homelessness services, what has been spent in homelessness emergency accommodation by local authorities last year alone amounts to over 500,000 per day. When you compare that to what is being spent in terms of homelessness prevention, which was just under 10 million for the entire year, you see that the priorities of government are again misplaced when it comes to housing. We really need to be looking more towards homelessness prevention rather than dealing with the consequences of failed housing policies. In terms of social housing, the government announced its intention to build 9,500 social housing units next year. Now that target, not only is it following the Rebuilding Ireland targets of the failed strategy, but also it's considerably low when we bear in mind that less than 10% of this year's target, just 725 units, were actually built by local authorities and approved housing bodies up to the first half of this year. And the target for next year was already 8,907 builds. It is regrettable again that the emphasis around social housing has been to privatise, has been to rely on the housing assistance payment and the rental accommodation scheme. The fact that 15,000 HAP units and 800 RAS units to a total value of 2.4 billion have been committed to represents a wastage and a missed opportunity. The emphasis on social housing solutions as opposed to real social housing leaves 133,000, we estimate, households in precarious accommodation. In terms of private rent, we do acknowledge and welcome the increase in funding for rent inspections. However, we regret the lack of action in relation to tenant protection or any sort of affordability in the rental market. In terms of construction affordability, again, the prices are just far beyond what most households can afford. The residential completions were decreased by 32% in the year to quarter two 2020, and relying on the private market to solve all ills when it comes to affordability, when it comes to social housing, is misguided in that it shows very much that we are a very pro-cyclical market. We regret the missed opportunity in Budget 2021, finally, to invest in local and regional small-scale developments, which would have created regional and local economic activity, would have created jobs for people, and would have restricted the amount of construction workers that need to move to large-scale products and move in between counties. We also regret the fact that Help to Buy was continued. This is an artificial stimulant for the market. It's artificially increasing prices. In fact, our analysis in looking at the revenue figures for Help to Buy and the figures on the property register suggests that twice the number of rent to buy houses cost between 226 and 375 compared to the national average. In terms then of retrofitting, we welcome the moves made in this regard. However, we regret the fact that the emphasis has moved away from supporting individual households and remains on grant assistance. There is evidence to suggest that many individuals just cannot afford the upfront costs in terms of these grants. So it is disappointing that more moves were not made to support individual households, particularly when we consider that over 230,000 households have the lowest energy efficiency ratings. And then finally, for me, is healthcare. And this is certainly a budget where the healthcare budget was absolutely critical given where we are with COVID-19. So there is much to welcome in terms of the healthcare spend. We welcome, for example, initiatives around community care and the commitment under Sláinte Care. We welcome the additional 5 million hours for home support. We welcome the 100 million in disability services in line with the UN Convention programmes. We also welcome the significant additional acute and community bed capacity in response to COVID-19. We recognise and welcome the need that vulnerable homeless people and those with drug addiction is going to be supported. We welcome the increase in income limits to qualify for the medical cards. And we very much welcome the emphasis on ensuring that the safety of staff and the adequate stock of PPE. While recognising the significant additional resource provided in COVID, it's also essential that resources are deployed in a way which delivers the transformation in healthcare as well as the essential services that are required. I'm going to pass you on now to my colleague Michelle to go on to education.
Thank you, Colette. So page 11 there contains the education section of our analysis. So this combines both the Department of Education and the newly formed Department of Further and Higher Education Research and Innovation. So just to contextualise, Ireland has faced ongoing pressures in terms of demographics through all levels of the education system in recent years and will continue to do so, with the resourcing of higher education being a particular challenge. COVID-19 has exposed a persistent underinvestment in terms of class sizes. We have some of the highest class sizes in Europe. And despite progress in reducing the gap, attainment gap between DESH schools and non-DESH schools, a gap still remains. And we also face challenges in terms of adult skills and lifelong learning. So there was significant investment in the budget in terms of posts at primary and second level and in terms of training and skills in further and higher education. So we welcome, first off, the continued commitment to fund 2 years of early childhood care and education. However, we regret that the overall investment in this area has not moved to meet the OECD average, and we feel it was a missed opportunity there to really invest in this area in budget 2021, because the benefits of investing in education far outweigh any initial costs. We welcome the additional allocations for special needs education and the rollout of the school inclusion model and the additional posts at primary and second level. However, we'd point out that more posts are required to deal with the demographic pressures. There was an allocation made to reduce the pupil-teacher ratio at primary level by 1 point, which is welcome. However, we regret that there wasn't a commitment and a target set in the budget to keep average class sizes below 20 and a pathway to reach this. Moving on then to the Department of Further Higher Education, Research and Innovation, we welcome the increase in the SUSE grant for postgraduate students. However, it's disappointing it wasn't expended to part-time students. We also welcome the additional investment in upskilling and reskilling and the 10,000 additional places. We particularly welcome the focus on climate skills and retrofitting, And we would hope to see in the detail that a proportion of these places are set aside for NEETs, so those young people not engaged in education, employment or training. I think that's particularly important given the challenges they face in the labour market at the moment. We regret that there wasn't a particular focus on community care, given the community education, rather given the reach this has at a rural and regional level and the impact that it can have. And finally, we regret that the long-term resourcing, particularly of further and higher education, was not addressed in this budget, and that remains a significant issue. Moving back then to page 4 of the document, so looking at Brexit and low-income households. So we addressed this in last year's document, and given that we are just 2 months away from Brexit and the potential of a hard Brexit is still a significant possibility, it is disappointing for us that low-income households didn't come in for consideration again in Budget 2021 when it comes to Brexit and the Brexit Fund. Brexit, particularly a hard Brexit, will have a considerable impact on low-income households due to the fact that our supermarket system is very exposed to the United Kingdom. And if we do move to a situation where there are WTO tariffs, the cost of food will increase considerably and consumer prices could rise by between 2 and 3%, looking at an increase in household costs over a year between 900 and just over 1,300 euros, which is significant for households. The spread of this cost will be uneven and it will be disproportionately borne by low-income households, because those households in the bottom 40% of the income distribution spend up to a fifth of their income on food. So there is a real challenge there. These households have the least capability to deal with an increase in their living costs. They simply can't absorb it. And yet again in Budget 2021, government did not acknowledge this challenge, and we would argue that government needs to widen its consideration of those who are going to be impacted by Brexit, and particularly hard Brexit, and that should such a scenario transpire in January, that these low-income households will need support to absorb increases in the living costs that they will inevitably face. And we would expect to see this rectified in the Brexit Fund, which was announced yesterday. Then moving on to page 8, looking at carbon tax and a just transition. We welcome the increase in the carbon tax. It is the increase that we called for in budget choices. And we also welcome that government put in the finance bill the pathway for the carbon tax to reach 100 euro a tonne by 2030. So a 7.50 euro increase every year up until 2029, and then a 6.50 euro increase in budget 2030. This reflects an overdue engagement with government with the unsustainability of our current systems, and it reflects an acknowledgement of the challenge that we do face in terms of reducing our emissions. We also welcome the commitment to invest this carbon tax revenue into areas such as residential and community energy efficiency, sustainable agricultural programmes, and some limited social protection measures. However, we would argue that these measures do not go far enough, particularly in terms of addressing energy poverty. As Colette mentioned earlier, in terms of renewable energy subsidies and retrofitting and grants, generally these subsidies are only taken up by those who can afford to make the necessary investments, and low-income households certainly do not have the spare capacity in terms of income available to take up those grants. So we need to look at a more comprehensive compensation strategy to support these households, both to mitigate against the increase in the carbon tax, but also to support them to move out of energy poverty and into more energy efficient homes. We also regret the lack of investment in community energy advisors and community energy programmes. This would not have cost a huge amount of money, but the impact that it would have had would be significant. Also concerning is that the budget didn't contain a commitment to review the subsidising of fossil fuel by the Exchequer. The CSO estimates that approximately 4 billion euros per annum was foregone by these potentially environmentally damaging subsidies between 2012 and 2016. At the very least, we would have expected to see an Oireachtas committee examine this in 2021 and report back to government, given the potential that these subsidies have to undermine the impact of other environmental taxation measures. We continue to highlight the importance of investing in a just transition. We are disappointed there wasn't extra investment in a just transition in Budget 2021 and significantly more investment in areas such as training and support for those communities who will be most impacted moving to a greener, cleaner economy, looking at things like investing in the circular economy, the bioeconomy. There was a commitment to a deep retrofit of homes, so we'd like to see this scaled up at a national level. And also more strategies, as I mentioned earlier, to eliminate energy poverty, more comprehensive strategies. So while there was some progress in Budget 2021, it's regrettable that more investment was not put into mitigation and transition and supporting those communities now as our economy shifts. Then also looking on page 8, looking at the budget proofing element. So while we do welcome the publication of the wellbeing indicators paper with the budget and the commitment by Minister McGrath to look at a wellbeing budget framework, one of the key components of a wellbeing framework, we would argue, should be poverty proofing, gender proofing and climate proofing. Yet Budget 2021 made very limited progress in these areas. For example, it failed to offer an estimate of the impact of the budget on poverty numbers, so poverty proofing. It failed to estimate the impact of the budget on child poverty, another poverty proofing element. There wasn't an estimate of the impact of the budget on gender equality and the gender pay gap. Neither was an estimate. Was there an estimate of the impact of the budget on our pathway towards achieving our environmental targets? Climate proofing. So that is a concern, because where budgetary policy is concerned, we must ensure that it's designed with substantial and detailed consideration of these impacts. So we would expect to see this in future budgets. Finally then, moving to page 9, we address a number of issues here, the first being corporation tax. We've consistently said that the issue of corporation tax is one principally around fairness, and that those profitable firms with substantial incomes should make a contribution to society rather than pursue various schemes in which to avoid making such a contribution. We do welcome that the minister acknowledged the change that is coming in terms of corporation tax as a result of the OECD process. We regret that government did not take a lead in this area and introduce a minimum effective corporate tax rate of 6% as we proposed in Budget Choices. This would generate an extra €1 billion per annum, and it would only impact a small number of firms, those firms that do not pay out of the 100 top corporate taxpayers. You have those 8 firms who pay 0% rather, or less in terms of corporate tax, 5 who pay between 0 and 1%, and the 7 who pay between 5 and 10. So this will really only impact those firms. So we're disappointed that this wasn't introduced in Budget 2021. Looking at minimum wage and low pay, Ireland continues to face a challenge in terms of low pay. It's experienced by at least 1 in 5 workers. While we welcome the increase in the minimum wage, it was still only 10 cents an hour. And if you contrast this with the recent increases in pay, as Colette outlined earlier, among other parts of the labour force, it's disappointing, given the fact that the COVID-19 crisis has highlighted how much we as a society rely on the work of those who are low paid. We continue to urge government to meet the commitment in the programme for government to move towards the living wage. Currently, the minimum wage will still be €2.10 an hour below the living wage in budget in 2021, and the living wage is a benchmark for minimum living standards for workers. Looking at older people then, while we welcome the funding for additional home support hours, resources in terms of home care packages and home care supports have not kept pace with population or dependency growth in this country. We expect to see more on this in future and forthcoming budgets. We are also disappointed that Budget 2021 failed to address the increasing levels of poverty among older people, and while we do welcome the increase to the living alone allowance, we regret the lack of an increase in the state pension or any ambition to move towards a universal pension system and pension reform. Moving then to disability. while there was some welcome investment, 100 million euros into disability health services, still no progress was made in terms of income supports for people with a disability. There was no increase in the disability allowance. There was very little in the budget to support people with disabilities, both in terms of finding employment and remaining in the labour market. We regret that the budget did not introduce a cost of disability payment, despite a study being commissioned on this in budget 2019. If people with a disability are to be equal participants in society, then the extra costs of their disability should not be borne by them alone. And we do need to see progress in terms of income supports, adequate income supports for people with a disability, and the introduction of a cost of disability payment. Finally, then, moving on page 9, moving towards rural communities, sustainability and the environment. So looking at the environment first, while there were some welcome measures in the budget on the environment, including the allocation to retrofitting, as discussed earlier, the investment in greenways, cycleways, cycling infrastructure and the skills development for our future green economy, we regret that more was not done in terms of taxation measures here. So there was no measure to introduce a levy on single-use coffee cups, to introduce a commercial air transport tax, nor, as I mentioned earlier, to examine potentially environmentally damaging subsidies. So we believe it was an opportunity missed in this regard. Looking then at rural Ireland and the regions, while we welcome the continued support for the rural regeneration and renewal programmes and the allocation for digital hubs, and the allocation for the National Broadband Plan, in the scheme of the challenges that rural Ireland faces, this investment is insufficient. Potentially, as these areas are facing into a prolonged period of unemployment for certain cohorts, they already face the challenges of lower incomes, higher dependency rates in terms of demographics, and greater distance to travel to public services and lower access to some services. So budget 2021 was a real missed opportunity then in terms of investment in rural Ireland and the regions. There was an opportunity for budget to develop a major regional development and transition programme focused not just on COVID-19 and on Brexit, but also looking to the future and how we can support regional economies to meet the challenges of reducing emissions and adapting to new technologies. This would have ensured sufficient investment in research, in rural transport, in broadband, in service provision, and in diversifying the rural economy. So without this significant investment, it is difficult to see how rural communities will meet these challenges. So we feel that despite some welcome investment, rural Ireland and our regions face significant challenges in 2021. And I'll hand over now to Sean.
Thank you, Michelle. So I want to start off, it's on page 22, drawing attention to progress that was made on a whole range of policy proposals that we actually included in our policy briefing on budget choices that we published some time ago, and in which we were advocating what should be done in the budget, obviously. We have, as Social Justice Ireland, consistently advocated for the adoption of new indicators to measure both well-being and sustainability in society, and that these should be used alongside the other measures like GDP, GNP, GNI star, and so on, all these things that economists use. And therefore, we welcome the publication of this, of a special paper on well-being and measurement of broader living standards in Ireland in yesterday's budget. At the same time, believe that there's quite some distance to go in this, and we would see ourselves as being engaged with government in this because of the fact that we have done a lot of work in this area. The second thing that we wanted to point to was that we proposed a €7.50 increase in carbon tax, and then argued that which was done in the budget and done for the next right up to 2030. But we also proposed that the resulting revenue be ring-fenced for a just transition fund. And we're not at all convinced that the ring fencing has protected the poorest in society in that context. And I think there are some serious distance to go before we could say that we actually have a just transition from where we are towards the destination that we have to move towards. A third area that we would draw attention to, and it's a major area, and we'll come back to it in a moment, is the whole area of fiscal stance. Because I think credit where credit is due, what the government have done in terms of a fiscal stance is the right way of approaching the current crisis. Moving on, we'll come back to that fiscal stance issue. On the rural issue, Michelle was just talking about some of the things that have been done, but I suppose we continue, and we welcome the things that are done, but we continue to highlight the need for significant and ongoing public investment in rural Ireland if we're going to reduce the gap that's there between urban and rural Ireland across a whole range of infrastructure and services and in the impacts that they have in terms of poverty and social exclusion. We welcome the money that was invested in the budget in retrofitting and the commitment there. But again, we look forward to seeing this policy being further resourced and developed and scaled up. Retrofitting is a critically important issue and it needs to be progressed substantially. Interestingly enough, the government developed this proposal to set up a commission on taxation and welfare. And what we find very interesting here is that for the first time, government has acknowledged that the tax system and the welfare system are actually one system. And the idea of having a commission to put them together and deal with them together because of the nature of their interlinked connections and so on is for us progress and something that we've been arguing in favour of for a long time. In the whole area of education and training, we've dealt with it already, but the issue of the expansion of the apprenticeships and trainee schemes to meet future skills needs, we just want to draw attention to that. It's something that we have advocated quite strongly for some time, and we're happy to see progress on that. We're also happy to, we've mentioned it already, but I just want to list it here, overseas development assistance could easily have been used as a soft target and been reduced. So we welcome the fact that the government has increased the amount of money slightly, and I think that's a move in the right direction, though we still have quite some distance to go to meet the UN target of 0.7% of GNP to be, or GNI to be delivered in terms of overseas development. And finally, given the fact that Social Justice Ireland has been advocating for decades for the development of primary care teams as the cornerstone of the healthcare system, we want to acknowledge the 150 million that was allocated in the budget to primary care to support the redesign of care pathways to make care more accessible in the community, including the development of community health networks. That for us is a very serious piece of progress that we want to acknowledge. We're close to getting to the destination of having the whole country covered by primary care centres and primary care networks, where people would see those as the first point of contact with the health system and not heading to accident and emergency departments of hospitals, which is what the current practice is, clogging up those departments and leading to the kinds of overcrowding and trolleys and so on that we have seen so much of in recent years. So moving on then to the whole issue of participation and community. This is an issue that we focus on always in terms of analysing the budget. So in budget 2021, we are disappointed really because the programme for government committed to support and enable a strong community sector. So it's very disappointing that that support did not really emerge in 2021. As the overall allocation to community development is actually reduced. I think when we look back as a society at the impact of the community of the early months in the first wave of this pandemic, we realise and recognise the huge role played by the community and voluntary sector in terms of dealing with the community call and ensuring that a lot of stuff was delivered at local level. So there are two kinds of areas that we have serious problems with. One is that the overall allocation for the community and voluntary sector that was halved more than 10 years ago after the last crisis, has never been restored. And it's the only sector in society that didn't have the cuts that were made 10 years ago restored by this point. And there's little of substance in the current budget to suggest that government is moving in that direction. And I think the contrast is quite stark. On the one side, you see the heroes of the early months of the pandemic and how it was being dealt with, and how those people were, so many of those were people working in the community. And at the same time, these are, now that the decisions have to be made about allocation of very substantial new resources, again, they're more or less ignored. Beside that, or within that, there is an area that we want to point to, which is the public participation networks. There's a public participation network in all 31 local authorities. They do a very good job of helping the participation of local groups and organisations in the community, voluntary, social inclusion and environmental sectors in the processes of developing a policy at a local authority level. There's over 15,000 organisations actively involved on an ongoing basis with these 31 public participation networks. So we welcome the fact that funding is continuing, but we regret that it hasn't improved and been strengthened in budget 2021. On page 23, we set out a whole area of different budget lines where there's a fair amount of money allocated in areas like physical and mental health, economy and resources at local level, social and community development, values, culture, meaning, environment, sustainability, participation, democracy, good governance, these kinds of areas, all areas of well-being. And on the one hand, the government was talking about the importance of well-being and that it's going to do serious work on this area. On the other side, the areas that would be part of well-being that need to be looked at weren't really being supported that much. A lot of those areas saw a reduction in their annual allocation in budget 2021. The other piece, I suppose, that we want to draw attention to in this context is that Ireland continues to lag behind on making progress on the Sustainable Development Goals. In our 2020 edition of Social Justice Ireland Sustainable Progress Index, Ireland ranked 10th of the European Union's 15 countries in our peer countries in terms of progress on SDGs. We did well on a few of them, but we didn't do well at all on the majority of them. And to be ranked 10th out of 15 is not on the Sustainable Development Goals is not something that we should be proud of. So therefore, I think we welcome the issue of the proposal to have to look more closely at this whole area, and we look forward to engaging with government on that area as well. So moving along, we now want to take a look at our kind of overall response to the budget, which you'll find on pages 1 and 2. And if we were to put it all in a single sentence and summarise the most important conclusion that we have, it's in our headline on page 1, that the budget 2021 leaves the poorest behind despite government rhetoric to the contrary. There's been a lot of talk by government in the programme for government and subsequently in the build-up to the budget that this would be a socially progressive budget, that there would be nobody left behind. But in reality, the decision not to increase core social welfare rates means, in effect, that the poorest people will, in fact, be left behind. The gap between the poorest and the rest of society will widen in 2021 as a result of this. Now, it's important for people to understand when making a comment on this that when you are calculating how the next year is going to shape up, it isn't just the budget initiatives that you have to include, because a lot of people will benefit from increases in their income. And the Department of Finance estimates that in 2020, the wages of employees rose by 2.9% and then go up by another 1.3% in 2021. Interestingly, by contrast, the core social welfare rates did not rise at all. So you have on the one side people's incomes going up by something like 4.5% over the 2 years. So that in effect means that the gap is widening. But it isn't just that. There's also other costs that poor people face, and particularly the people on social welfare core payments who do not benefit from fuel allowances or do not benefit from some of the other very welcome initiatives that government did take yesterday. But there are tens of thousands of people who won't benefit from those at all, or only benefit from some of them. And as well as the being left behind in terms of the pay, the difference between what happens to their no increase and people's pay increases for those with jobs, there's also the reality that people in this space will face additional increases in the cost of food as a result of Brexit, and they will also face higher charges for public transport as a result of increased carbon tax. And that's just to point to two areas where their costs are going to increase. So therefore, the value of their €203 a week is actually going to deteriorate in the period immediately ahead. Now, I also think it's important to state that Social Justice Ireland recognises that poverty is never just about income. But we also assert that poverty is always about income. If you don't deal with the income issue, you're not dealing really with poverty. You have to deal with the other issues as well. And it's not just about income, but the income issue is critical. And on that basis, there was quite serious failure here in government policy. Now, in our kind of broader analysis of the budget, we are very happy with that government took the correct fiscal stance. And this is the reality we're in is very different to what it was in the period between 2008 and 2014, when the state faced a very difficult situation. And what it did at that time was to reduce its expenditure. And so we welcome the fact that the lessons of a decade ago have been learned, and that the approach we advocated at that time is now being followed. And I think we'll have a much better outcome as a result of that. On the other side, we also want to point out that there's an inadequacy in the COVID-19 response, because the COVID-19 public health measures rely on the state supporting the incomes of workers and the vitality and viability of firms to ensure that both are in a position to comply with the measures, and for workers and owners alike to live with dignity. And this was the key to addressing the first wave of the virus. But this is now not the case because of the fact that so many people depending on state payments will see no increase in the period ahead. One thing that we want to point to very positive is the increased investment. It's extremely welcome and good to see. We've also mentioned that the community health networks rollout will see primary care in its rightful place at last. And we have spent decades arguing for that. It's good to see it almost at a resolution at this point, almost at the destination that we have been advocating for so long. That still leaves a lot of reform to be done in the healthcare system, but we believe if you put these community health networks into place, you will have put the cornerstone, the key building stone, into place, and that would be very, very positive. On the other side, we are also pointing to the fact that there's no progress on just taxation in this budget. We had advocated to government that this was a good time to actually plan for the future. Not that they needed to bring in the changes in this year's budget, but that should have set them out. The only thing that they set out at length was the carbon tax. But all the rest of it they didn't deal with, really. And I think that's a huge missed opportunity, as is the failure the failure to address the funding gap for the community and voluntary sector. So I think we would point in Social Justice Ireland to the fact that all budgets are value-based documents. The government said that they would be socially progressive in this, but if it were to be socially progressive, it should have ensured that nobody was left behind. In this, it failed dramatically. The post-COVID Ireland requires a new social contract and a new social dialogue. And while Budget 2021 saw many welcome initiatives, it did not go nearly enough of the distance towards getting us to a new social contract and a new social dialogue. So bring it finally then to just develop that a little bit. We have on page 24, the last page of the our analysis and critique of the budget, we spell out what could have been done in this whole area of developing a new social contract. And we conclude that a good opportunity has been missed. There were a lot of things that could have been done that we were advocating were important, that could have been done to get us towards this a social contract. I think things that we would point to that are missing: the continued absence of ring-fence funding for Sláinte care infrastructure, the lack of acknowledgement of the need to benchmark core social welfare rates, the absence of a commitment to target 20% of the housing stock to be social housing. At the moment, we have 7% of our housing stock is social housing. The European average is 20. Yeah, I can't understand how we think we're going to solve it by keeping it at that level. The lack of movement also needs to be highlighted towards creating a cost of disability payment. This is an important part of a new social contract, and it's not moved towards at all in this. The refusal to fully equalise job seekers' rates for under 25s, that's another issue. And there's quite a number of others. At the end of the day, we need a vibrant economy. Everybody's going to say that. Everybody will agree to that. But what we've been arguing with in the policy arena for some time now is to point out that development of a vibrant economy, you can't have a vibrant economy without having good infrastructure and decent services. You can't have it without having just taxation. You also need good governance, and you need sustainability. And all of these things must be worked on simultaneously. It's not an issue about getting the economy right, and then subsequently we'll have the money to put into infrastructure or good services, decent services. We actually need that infrastructure and those services to actually deliver the vibrant economy, and so on. So unfortunately, in Budget 2021, government has concentrated on the economy again and has made the same mistake as it has made before, because progress in this area and a sort of a moving away from a boom-bust cycle, it is, if we're to do that, it is essential that we deal with these issues simultaneously and not in sequence. And government has failed to put the simultaneous development into place that is required in Budget 2021. And so I hand you back to Colette.
Thank you very much, Sean. So that concludes the presentation section of today's seminar. I'm just going through some of the questions that have come in at conference@socialjustice.ie. So I suppose there's a number of people expressing disappointment in terms of the lack of action in relation to the core social welfare rates. And there's a comment in relation to payments for those living in direct provision. And absolutely, I mean, we would share that disappointment. We went into some detail in relation to the regret in terms of social welfare rates and core social welfare rates, particularly where people are in terms of unemployment at the moment. And however, you know, absolutely, we share the concerns in relation to direct provision. We had called for an increase in the adult payment and also a payment of child benefit for children living in direct provision. And unfortunately, that was missed in Budget 2021. Instead, there has been an increase to accommodation supports. However, you know, evidence suggests that the accommodation supports for COVID-19 are grossly inadequate anyway, between people living in communal accommodation and those self-isolating only when they're experiencing symptoms. So absolutely, I mean, we would certainly share that regret.
There is one positive thing in that I think we need to acknowledge, and we do acknowledge in the text, which is that there's a very substantial amount of money allocated to implementing the McMahon report.
Yeah.
And I think we need to welcome that, because McMahon report basically wants an end to division to the direct provision. And I think the fact that they're at least beginning to move in that direction, I think should be welcomed. And also, we kind of look forward now to the arrival very soon of the Day Commission report, and we'll see whether that can be progressed further.
Certainly. A question in relation to carbon tax. So while we have welcomed the carbon tax, are we concerned that it will do more harm to the urban-rural divide?
Well, I suppose we make the point that yes, we welcome the carbon tax, but that the compensation strategies could have been more comprehensive, and that we do regret that there wasn't more investment, both in terms of mitigation and transition, and I suppose more investment in rural Ireland as a whole, because this was a real opportunity to put the money in and the investment into providing people with alternatives and supporting those households on low incomes. Because the reality is the majority of households in the country, but all households in rural Ireland, simply cannot avoid the increase in the carbon tax. They will be more impacted than urban dwellers. And yet we didn't see the necessary compensation strategies put in place. That is a disappointment, and I think that's certainly something that will need to be addressed in the coming year, and perhaps we might see a proportion of the recovery fund perhaps diverted towards this as well.
Okay. There is a question in relation, I suppose there's two in relation to sustainability. One is in relation to the sustainability of the fiscal policy overall. You know, are we not really looking at a return to austerity sooner rather than later? And the other is in relation to specifically to the healthcare budget and the sustainability of that type of spending. Eamon, if you'd like to take the first one.
In relation to
the sustainability of the fiscal policy in relation to the investment.
Yeah, I suppose just again to reiterate, we really felt that the fiscal stance taken by government in this particular budget was the correct one. But the reason for that is quite simple. By supporting the economy through this very difficult period, you're leaving it in a better position for the medium to long term. And when we do get to a point where those supports can be taken away, you'll find, at least we hope you'll find, and almost certainly will find, that the economic capacity of the economy is in a much better position than it otherwise would have been. The last thing we want to do is to follow a pro-cyclical approach, which would lead to a downward spiral in economic growth like we had 12 years ago. And if we can maintain our economic capacity through this difficult period and setting ourselves up for the medium to long term, as I was saying, you'll find that any fiscal adjustment that needs to be made in the future will be greatly reduced.
I think it probably needs to be acknowledged that most major commentators across the world and institutions like the International Monetary Fund all now agree that they made a serious mistake in how they addressed the 2008-2009 crash. And what they did there was take the austerity approach, and the result was that tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people in Ireland lost jobs who wouldn't have lost them if we'd had the approach that we have today. Now, we're very aware of this because we argued this case at that time and argued it very strongly at that time, but lost the argument, obviously, because government went the austerity route. But I think we're very welcoming of the fact that they've gone this particular approach now, and I think we will actually see a situation where people, a lot of jobs will be protected, and people who lose their jobs will have a better protection than they would have had, we'll say, a dozen years ago. And that'll be positive for the economy, but also very positive for society.
In terms of the sustainability of the healthcare spend, I mean, obviously we're in a very difficult position in terms of we're in an unprecedented pandemic, so that the spending in terms of healthcare has to be made at the moment. We would, however, obviously call in terms of a spending on the capital side, in terms of ring fencing the infrastructure spend on Sláinte Care and making sure that we are geared up for future, so that, you know, we have the infrastructure in place, and it's a case of ensuring, you know, levels of service to meet demand.
There's also, I suppose, the fact that some of the expenditure in health, hopefully, will not be needed, like contact tracing and things of that nature. It should hopefully recede over time. They mightn't recede in the coming year, I think government is beginning to realise that maybe this pandemic is going to continue having this kind of effect for another while, beyond maybe what they thought it was going to be in the beginning. But at the same time, we would certainly argue, well, there could be savings on that side. The money invested, obviously, in healthcare has to be invested carefully to make sure that we get best outcomes.
Absolutely. That is all of the questions and comments, just looking that we've kind of covered everything that was in there. So that concludes our seminar on Budget 2021. Thank you so much for your time in logging on, in having a look through our document and in listening to our presentation today. Our next event will be our annual social policy conference, which will take place on Wednesday, the 18th of November. And details of that will be available on our website shortly. So thank you so much.